All right, here we are. It's GloucesterCast 214. I'm here with John Ronan and Kim Smith.
Good morning, Gloucester.
John, you got a new book out.
I do, Joey. I do.
It's called, what is it called?
Long title, Taking the Train of Singularity South from Midtown.
South from Midtown.
And that's a great title.
It's about riding the one train in Manhattan and kind of a celebration of New York City plurality and American plurality, and it's one of the many what I call civic poems in the book. A lot of them from Gloucester too. It's not centered on New York, but the title poem is about New York.
So it's there's a bunch of poems in there.
Oh yeah,
that's what it's about.
The book has let me see, I didn't count them. 34 poems.
34 poems.
About 100 odd pages, published by Backwaters Press, and that came out officially January 15th, just a few days ago. And so I'm doing readings. I'm going to be reading at the museum here in town February 25th, and that's the official launch.
What's funny right now is that John just, you know, they just finished taping the 27th year, continuous years,
wow,
of the writer's block at KPN TV.
That's just amazing.
And the writer's block, he interviews people that write books.
Yeah. And
here he is here. And we're interviewing him about his book.
You interviewed me a few years ago, and it's really nice to be back, and I appreciate this, Joy. You were on the show,
yep,
and so was Kim on the show.
Yeah.
We're going strong.
Anybody that's anyone has been on that show. Just joke, aren't you?
Almost.
No, but talk about the writer's block a little bit.
The writer's block has been fun all those 27 years. I was on a show. I was interviewed in Albany, New York, years and years ago. And on the drive back, I got the idea, maybe I could do a show like this, KPN. And Cynthia Nagella was the director over at KPN TV at the time. So I made an appointment, went over and said, listen, I was driving back from Albany, and I thought maybe I could, and I didn't finish the sentence. She said, when do you want to start?
Yeah, yeah. They're looking for content over there.
They're looking for content. And there's a lot of good stuff generated over there.
There really is.
She said, when do you want to start? I started, and been going strong ever since. It's a lot of fun. And this year, I did something I've done once or twice in the past. I had a show where I interviewed myself. Because I had this book coming out, and damn it,
yeah,
I've been here 27 years, I'm going to interview me.
Yeah.
And so I interviewed myself.
Was it about this book?
Yes, it was this book. It was before, I got the book in my hands, the book came out, actually. Yeah. I didn't have it in my hand, but I had the manuscript. So I talked about the book. And
Let me just ask you also, where can people buy the book?
Amazon.
Okay.
There's some other sites, but that's the big central site.
Okay.
It's going to be at the museum. It's going to be at the bookstore locally, but not yet.
Okay.
Amazon has it. Amazon says, I checked this morning, it says it won't be out until January 15th.
Oh, okay.
So pre-order. Well, it's January, what is it, 18th.
Right.
So Amazon made a mistake.
Get on the stick. Well, we want to pimp it to people to buy it locally at
good.
The bookstore Gloucester, and I imagine Tote Hall.
I haven't talked to Tote Hall yet because I've been running around doing them.
Wait a second. Can I ask you a question?
Sure. Yes, sure.
You're the guy. We form a poet laureate, right?
Yes.
You interview a million people about books, and Tote Hall doesn't have every single one of your books?
I don't know if they do or not, to tell you the truth.
Well, if they don't, they're dead to me.
No,
I'm just joking. I just assumed that, you had a good relationship with the local bookstores.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
You're
not going to have a good, I'm going to tell you, if you lead with you can buy it on Amazon, you're not going to have such a good relationship with the bookstores.
Well, the local
you
store.
You're going to lead with, this. I'm going to tell you right now, business point, you got to lead with you can buy it at the bookstore at Gloucester.
Okay.
And then you can go to Tote Hall secondary.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
There you go.
I wouldn't put a plug in for Tote Hall because they carry my book continuously, and they have been since it came out, which is really awesome. And they have a lot of local authors.
That's what we do here.
Right.
We pimp local people. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The press, the publisher does a good job of connecting us.
Because you're the creative. You're not so much the market. Right now you're doing some marketing, but really the publisher goes around to the bookstores and places.
Because they have a distributor,
right? Is that how it works?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Poets are too lofty to do. Deal with money, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that stuff? I don't know. You're absolutely right. And I'm going to be reading at the bookstore. That date is not set.
Beautiful.
That's not set. So they're going to have it. The museum's going to have it. Other places, Toad Hall. And that other place, what's it? Begins with an A. Amazon, that's right.
And that other place.
I keep forgetting that.
That's right, yeah.
I love the title of your book because I was just in New York, and so even like when you stop in the rest, so you're driving to New York, right, and you stop in a rest area in Connecticut, you're still, you know, 200 miles outside of New York or whatever, 100 miles, and everybody in the rest area is either Indian, you know, just the customers, the people that work there, they're Indian or Arabic or whatever. I mean, it is just so...
It's an international...
It's just so...
No place, there's so, no place.
So
like
it is so plural. I mean, it is just
it is.
So beautiful. It was, you know, just... I just loved being there every single second.
I love you here. You walk down a block, two blocks in New York, and hear 10 languages.
Yeah.
And I'm more sensitive about that now because our son Tim married a woman from Poland, and my wife is learning Polish now.
Yeah.
Wow. What an impossible language to learn!
Where do they live?
They live in Brooklyn. He's a musician.
Yeah, my daughter was living in a neighborhood in Brooklyn that was all Polish.
Polish
neighborhood. Yeah, you just walk down the street. Yeah. It's all Polish, Polish bakeries, Polish language. But that's not where she's living now. Now it's every nationality. It's just she lives in
Bushwick. New York City now compared to New York City 20 years ago, it's like a completely different place.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yes.
It's a lot more expensive.
Giuliani made it. The taxes. They don't just have. They have city taxes. That's not a real estate tax.
Right.
They have a city tax. That's an income tax.
Right. My daughter pays so much.
Which is like
you stay in a hotel room down there. The hotel costs.
Right.
$200, and then this is $250.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's in Boston too. That's actually here in Gloucester. There's a hotel rooms tax.
Yeah, but it's.
But I understand you're paying the vig for that cleanliness and those parks and everything and the safety that they provide in New York because there's a lot of safety.
I love being in New York. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of money, but I love being down there. And it's a symbol kind of what's happened over the centuries in the United States, you know, all these different people. I know my ancestors, I'm a little Irish, and these people, they couldn't get jobs when they came over. The Irish, they're dirty. No, they're all drunk. And those kind of cliches, but everybody kind of finally comes kind of together. And so this book and the title poem is about that. I wonder if I could read the introduction of this.
I would love that.
May I?
Yes. Thanks for bringing us back on topic.
Because
we're way off topic.
I read a book about selling your book. And one of them, it says, during interviews, it's the book.
Yeah.
I'm going to read the first. This is in different sections, depending on the stop. I'm going to read the first one. Because this is, the title is Taking the Train of Singularity South from Midtown. So it starts in Times Square, 42nd Street. And the first section, about 20 lines, is 42nd Street. Here I go. As the funnel of everyone in Times Square cascades down the station stairs, pace and urgent purpose damming briefly at turnstiles before cleaving into streams for an 8th or 7th Avenue train, an A train, the 2, and while quick diverged currents, hot and breathless, pick platforms, stop to listen for slivering steel drums in the wait for translation to work or home. Here, at the side of a narrow island 40 feet underground with a wind rush and rattle that drive away agile, enterprising mice, et tag, beer tren, mjoha treni, ein tren, premier tren, juden trenovat, the red one train halts, and the motley mustard public steps forward, hushed and obscure, hips shifting at doors in slide-by witness, separate bodies, white and yellow, brown, black, and tan, pocked or whiskery, whiskied, wan, green, gray, big, or bonehouse, the meek, mouthy, angry, lost, a tourist who trails maps and binoculars, jamming last onto the crowded car. App trance and defensive doze, deft conventions of eye and elbow mind the tribes. A breath brushes your strapping hand. The platform passes.
Wow.
Wow, that's awesome.
I like it.
Awesome.
I hate to say that, but it's a fun poem.
I was just on the train 2 days ago, so yeah? it's just like that. And that's, you really captured it. That's beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Really beautiful.
Thank you. I want to stress, there's a lot of Gloucester poems in here too. One that I wrote for John Bell's first inauguration, and one about the funeral parlor on Washington, Greeley.
Greeley's.
And a lot of other poems about Gloucester, kind of, because I think civic poetry about places, not I feel this way, I feel that way. Mm-hmm. I like poems about places and events and concrete poems.
I like your category, civic poetry. That's interesting. I
got real aware of that when I was poet laureate. You can't tell people, so-called confessional poetry, I feel so sorry for myself. I got to examine my feelings. I don't like that stuff. I don't go there. I don't know if that's gender-related or not, but I...
No, I think there's a lot of... the kind of thing that goes on. I have to tell you something that is kind of goes along. This is,
yeah.
It's a little bit. So my husband wrote a short story, and it took place in America, and it had an American character and an American river, and it was about a river and this journey that this person took down the river. And he couldn't get it, he was submitting it to all the little places that you submit short stories. And so then he had this idea, so he changed the name of the character to an Indian, like from India, Indian, yeah. And an Indian river.
Dot, not feather.
And it was...
taken.
It was published immediately.
Yeah.
He submitted it, it was published immediately. Jeez. He didn't change anything but
that's
the name
wild.
Of the character, yeah. But he was just, it was just an interesting...
Well, yeah.
But it's a little different than what you're talking about, but I just thought, it really, just about giving poems and stories a sense of place and things like that. It's
a very
interesting commentary on what's going on in the publishing world.
Your husband's been on my show too, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Not in a while.
But he has a new book out.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
He's busy.
Yeah. Well, he has all his books that he writes for clients, but he has a book that he wrote himself out, and it's How to Hire a Ghostwriter.
That's amazing.
Good idea.
I love that cover.
Yeah.
Who did the cover?
The designer was Steve Foley, and that's a New York City subway picture of the one train, of course.
Yeah.
And they did a good job.
And is it a painting from a photo?
No, that's a photo.
That's a photo.
It's a photograph.
Yeah, it looks like a painting. It's
straight photo. It's nice.
It's really
I think
well
it might be
composed.
A little, maybe a little filtered, softened a little bit.
Softened, yeah.
It's the one train, and it's... the station is not visible there. I don't know what station it's at.
You're going to do a reading of this on February 2nd at 2 o'clock at the Cape Ann Museum.
February 25th.
25th. Oh, I'm sorry.
February
25th. At
2 o'clock, Saturday.
At 2 o'clock, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So what happens at these readings? Like, how much of the book do you read?
They usually give you a time limit. I think for the museum, it's going to be a half hour to 40 minutes of reading. And then I picked the poems out. That's about, 9-10 poems. It's not a lot of poems. Because the main poem here takes 7.5 minutes to read.
He's got that down.
So, I got everything timed out. So I read for 30 or 40 minutes. That depends on the audience reaction.
Yeah.
And once I stopped at 30, and then the audience said, no, we want, here's more. I thought, that's fabulous. And then you have some Q&A. So the whole process is maybe an hour.
It's better to leave them wanting more.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. That's something David Godin told me. He said, when you go to a book, and he's such a smart man. I mean, he's like a genius.
Yeah.
So, and he said, when you go to when you do a book reading or whatever, just read a few pages and then make it much more about, yes. you know, talking with the audience and relating to the audience.
That's a really good point, yeah. and I think that's absolutely true.
Because you want them to want more. You don't want them to be like, you know, dying in their chairs.
My son tells me that. He's the musician. Leave him wanting more. Don't kill the interest.
How long were you the Poet Laureate for?
I think my term was 2 years.
Does everybody get 2 years?
Is that no, I think it's 4 years now. Vincent was, when Vincent and the Poet Laureate position was created by Gus Foote and another counselor, whose name I'm not going to, Dean Harrison, mm-hmm. they created the Poet Laureate position, and then Vincent was appointed for life. Okay. So he was on for a long, long time.
I didn't know. So Dean Harrison, he was a councilman.
Yes.
Dean Harrison from Annisquam.
Who just died? Well, they had moved to New Jersey.
He was in the Annisquam Village Play. He's a good singer and was at the.
Yes, very good singer. He loved to sing. David's brother.
David's brother. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I never knew because I knew him.
Yeah, he used to play tennis. They used to be at the. Bass Rocks. They were in turnips together.
It was lifetime appointment, and then I was second. They gave me a 2 year, and then I don't know what happened politically. But now they created 4 years. Although since Peter died, there is no Poet Laureate.
That was my next question. That was where I was going with this. Okay. I was wondering, like, because I didn't want to sound ignorant, but I was like, I don't like who's the poet. Who's there, the who's the current Poet Laureate?
There isn't one.
Which is strange.
And who names it?
Is it the mayor?
Well, it's the council's power.
Oh, okay. So do you put names forward for
maybe
them?
Maybe we should petition nominate. Them to...
Well, there's,
petition
there's,
them to
there's an arts committee that does not seem to function real smoothly right now.
Dun-dun-dun.
Right.
There's some background there. Yeah. Well, we gotta slap him around, get him in shape.
Vincent thought it was a really important position, and I do as well.
Very special that we.
Oh, no question about it. It's just one more thing, yeah. Stewarding of the art and poetry is part of art. We're known as this unbelievable
writing.
There should be somebody, and without Gus, you know, he hasn't been on the committee for a long time.
So I think about what I was saying was how important as an art community, it's not just about painting, it's not just about music,
right.
It's not just about the museum.
Right.
Writing is right there, and to have a steward, and you know a shepherd of for writing. Well, we do have the Writers' Center.
We have the Writers' Center, and we have the Eastern Point Lighthouse, and both of those are. They work together and autonomously as well.
And there is, I want to plug Poetry Without Paper that David McArdle and I started in 2003.
It's also Fish Tales.
For the citywide writing contest, poetry contest for students.
Was that the library, right?
Yeah, the Lyceum. Yeah. And it's still going and I'm still involved in that. And Christy Rosso over there, the children's librarian, is very, very active.
She's wonderful.
And good. She is. She's a
wonderful person.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. I think, you know, Gus Foote was behind Poet Laureate. And I've talked to people, I get in arguments with people, I make fun of Gus. Well, he's not a poet exactly, is he? You know, and they're sarcastic. No, but he started Poet Laureate, and he's one of the most decent people I've ever met in this city. And, excuse me, he started it, he created it. And but he's not on the council, and there's nobody there stepping
up. I'm glad you're sharing that, because I don't think most people know that about Gus Foote.
I talked to Melissa Cox.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she left the council, right?
No. Yeah. Well, she's still there. But she's a friend of ours, and I'll just put her here. Like right now, there's no Poet Laureate.
Yeah. Good. Mentioned her. I like Melissa. I talked to her about. I had a writing project. I'm still going to do. I'm going to compare the two downtown American Gloucester hotels, Beauport and Crow's Nest.
Oh, there you go.
And maybe go on a pub crawl from Beauport to Crow's Nest. She said, if you do it, call me. I want to be on it with you.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that. You know, people have outsiders have a vision of what they think the Crow's Nest is. And, you know, if you go in the Crow's Nest, the bartenders are really nice.
The drinks are cheap, and the fishermen are not surly. They're very friendly.
Oh, yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
They're really, and they're eager to tell stories. I mean, not all of them, but like, you go in there, everybody's, it's just this big, you know, horseshoe bar that doesn't
agree.
And it's actually a pretty, nice it's place. Not the worst place in town to go have a drink.
Oh, no, it's one of the better places. I know Greg real well. I knew Ethel. Mary Ann, Greg's wife, Mary Ann Schaeffer, was a student of mine about 30 years ago. I mean, a long time ago, when she was five.
Where was that? A student where?
At North Shore Community College.
North Shore Community College, yeah.
Before she started teaching. But, you know, the Crozes is a decent bar, if you like bars.
I hear so many good things about North Shore Community College from the students.
I think it does a good job. Yeah. It does a very good job.
I hear that, you know, like they're just fair and they do right by the students, unlike another university in the community that like gouges people for meal plans and does all kinds of crazy
stuff. I can't imagine who you're talking about.
Yeah, but I wanted to give a little plug to the Crow's Nest, only because...
Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah, we went there... So this is our night. We went to Tono. I had friends from out of town in. We went to Tono for dinner, which is fantastic.
Right.
And then we finished up the night at the Crow's Nest, and we had a hoop.
Yeah.
We had a great time.
And your friends probably loved it because
they loved it. Yeah, we had a blast. Right. And you know, the bartenders were joking around with us. And
I was at the Crow's Nest once. This was right after Perfect Storm came out, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And you know. A couple and their two kids, they looked like they were from Iowa, really clean cut, stuck their head in the door. And I could see the woman saying to the man, I don't think so, honey. This is like a real bar. We shouldn't go in there. There we go.
I think the Perfect Storm has created a, like a treasure trove. I mean, that's like a printing press for that for the place, you know. People, a lot of tourists, especially in the summertime, you see a lot of tourists going in there.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I can't tell you how many hats I've bought for relatives that wanted a Crow's Nest.
I would say the Crow's Nest is just behind Cape Pond Ice as far as popularity of T-shirts in town.
Yeah.
The big controversy, the latest big controversy, the coyote.
Oh yeah.
The coyote. So the coyote. Okay, I'm gonna take a little issue with the way you wrote your thing.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, dear.
And now I'm, you know, whatever.
Okay, yes.
Like I thought that the headline was a little salacious, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You know, little petite dog mauled while the owner forced to stay in the car. I think it was a little overboard. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but like you might have spoken to the people.
Okay.
But
no. Well, you know what?
There was a lot of kickback on that from the, and we know that there are huge coyote sympathizers on the other side. There's somewhere in between.
It was on. So somebody had sent me the local, a link to the local article because I was away and I opened it up. And that's basically what the headline was from the.
Oh, okay. So that wasn't your headline?
No, it was. I think I changed it a little bit, but I mean it was basically the same thing. So I don't remember. I put the link to the article right there, so we can compare it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But that's what I got in my inbox.
On Rocky Neck, so just to back up a little bit, on Rocky Neck, little, do you know what kind of dog it was?
It was a poodle, and the poodle's name was Skippy, or Skipper. Skipper.
Okay, there's a little, I know, right? How could
Skippy.
You not?
The little poodle's name was Skippy.
Little poodle's name was Skippy, and the dog was left on a leash while the owner was inside.
Yes.
And so I don't know, where was the person being forced to stay in a car? Because I thought the person was in the house.
They came out to try to get the dog from the coyote's jaws.
And they ran into the car because that was the closest place?
Right. And then, I mean, I wasn't there, I don't know, but this is what I understand, mm-hmm. is that they kind of battled with the coyote to get the dog away from the coyote. The coyote wouldn't let it go. Mm-hmm. And finally the coyote dropped it and turned on them. So, but by this time the dog was already damaged. And when it turned on them, they ran towards the car because that was probably the closest thing. I don't know. You know, I'm just assuming.
So that. I'm not gonna call bullshit on these people because right. the, you know, we're respectful right. to these people. In my where I live is directly in between where I consider the highest density
right.
populations of coyotes in Gloucester. Between right. the sand fields, there's a huge pack right there. At the end of my street, I hear them yip every single night,
yeah.
loud as if they were in, if they were 20 feet away. On the other side, the golf course is another huge, like,
yeah.
I don't know if it's the same pack that travel or if it's
well,
not.
According to some people, there's like 3 or 4 packs that are living there. I don't know.
Right. So, in any case, in my, so now, for the past 3 or 4 years, we routinely see coyotes.
Right.
Every interaction I've had with them, as soon as they've seen me,
yeah.
they either trot away or they run away.
Right.
I've never had a situation where a coyote stared me down
right.
or made any kind of aggressive
wait,
move.
Does that indicate rabies, maybe?
It could.
Potentially,
but also, I think like the coyote encounter that I had on the beach where... it wanted food. There was a dead thing on the beach, and it wanted that food.
Okay.
So it did not, it let me get so unbelievably close to film before it scooted away. It scooted away. I thought it had left. You know, I thought, oh, good, I've, you know, frightened it away. I've got
yep.
my camera and my tripod. So I'm on the beach. It's on the beach. I'm, like, from here to that wall from the coyote. Filming it. I have the film footage.
And you didn't shit your pants? I wouldn't have been
so, there. You know, he's looking at me the whole, you know, he's going like this. Like
was
that.
There anything in between the two of you?
Just beach.
So there was a coyote 15 feet away
like
from
that,
you, 20
yeah.
feet away from
yes,
you,
yeah.
and you stood your ground.
Yes.
Okay.
So then, and I kept expecting it to run off. That's why.
Yeah.
I had my tripod, you know what I mean? I thought, oh, well, there's my weapon, you know, my tripod,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So then it went off the beach towards the grass, and I thought, oh, I'm perfectly safe here. Well, I did not, so then I filmed some ducks. I turn around to go, and it's trotting towards me now. And because now I'm standing in between it and the food that it wanted to come back to. So that's the thing. That's why I think that these ladies got into trouble because this was this coyote's
right.
dinner. So anyway, so I'm kind of scared because obviously it went, you know, it circled around and it had been watching me the whole time. And so it's trotting towards me, right? So I just kind of stand still and it keeps coming. Then a car comes. And the car, and I'm very close to the road. The car startled it, and it ran off. So that was, you know. But I'm just saying, like, when there's food involved, I think this is a whole different thing. Like, if you see a coyote in your neighborhood and it's trotting, it's, you know, running through or on its way to food or whatever. But these ladies came between it and the food.
That's a good point. So it's really the animal's not. Running down people. The animal just wants to eat.
It just
and we
wants
get in
to
the
eat.
Way.
Right.
Just
it's
like,
just trying to eat.
So do you think there's actually a coyote problem or is it just so sensationalized? Everybody's running around saying, oh,
I think
sky
it's
is
a
falling.
Combination of both. I think it's sensationalized, but I also think that the coyotes are becoming increasingly emboldened. There have been repeated stories about people feeding coyotes at Sane Field to get them to come out to photograph.
So my feelings are, I'll go quickly over this, that the first coyotes that, 49 years old I am,
yeah.
first coyotes I had seen in my entire life in East Gloucester
right.
was about 8 years ago.
Right. And you've
and
lived here your whole life?
I've lived
here
my whole life, never saw them before. There's obviously huge population growth in them.
Yeah.
In the beginning, when I first saw them.
And not just on Cape Ann.
Right,
all over the whole entire country.
You talk to everyone,
right.
everywhere. I was talking to a guy from Maine yesterday.
Right.
He said that actually where he is, he's a hunter.
Right.
They just kill him.
Right.
Or they just shoot him. And then they go and they sell their pelts and stuff. I don't know if that's legal or not, but that's what the
legal.
Guy, that's
it
what the guy told
me. It is totally legal.
Okay. So
it's totally legal in Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but you just can't do it
in a residential
neighborhood.
Right. But... So my initial thought
eight years ago when I first started seeing them was, wow, there's a problem. This is scary. They're gonna kill. I value our pets more than I value a coyote's life. And then as the years go on, and seeing them often in East Gloucester where I live, to me it doesn't seem there's the random occurrence, and it seems to be involving small dogs,
or cats,
but not humans. And the lady that, can you go back, and because you talked to the woman on Eastern Point.
The woman on Eastern Point, yes. Yeah.
Can you describe that, how she described that scenario? Now, she said that it climbed on her back or something,
right?
It
jumped on her back.
But do you think that there was a dog on the other side of her? Because wasn't she leaving the dog?
Yeah, she has dogs. She has dogs. So I don't know exactly where the dogs were positioned. And so she's sitting in a very... she was sitting on the edge of the pond, just having a cup of coffee, relaxing. So,
early morning,
yeah. Right? Like probably like 7.
Yeah.
And,
did it attack her?
It was not like trying to bite her.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't think that was the case at all. So, of course, imagine her.
Oh, I'd be frightened. I would be frightened to death.
Right.
But the fact was, the coyote did not attack the human.
Right, and it was looking for food.
And it was looking for food.
It was looking for food.
I don't believe that parents leave little babies
outside. Right.
I don't believe.
Right.
Like, and I feel terrible for this woman on Rocky Neck.
Yeah.
That. Her dog got
mauled
to death.
She's 75 years old, and it's cold out. You want your dog to go out and do its business.
But ultimately, is it the coyote's thing? Ultimately, you know what I mean? Is that problem? Does the fault lie with the coyote or the woman?
Of course, people should not be leaving their dogs tied up. In this high coyote area, but she's 75 years old, and she's
I feel terrible for her.
Yeah,
but see, the people are extrapolating this incident to saying that we have a coyote problem.
Right.
Is it a coyote? That's the point where I'm getting to.
Right.
Like, we haven't had a person. They said that there was 7 coyote bites on humans recorded.
Okay, so let's look at the overall habit of the coyote over the last 10 years.
Uh-huh.
First, they were just out at night. You know what I mean? You would never see them during the day,
yep.
Right? Now we see them all hours of the day and night. You know, in the middle of the afternoon,
a little bit more brazen.
They're more brazen. They're more emboldened. And it's interesting to see evolutionarily how this is unfolding because, they're becoming increasingly comfortable around people.
Mm.
So what does that mean? Like if a 5-year-old is standing between it and some garbage on the street, you know what I mean? Like, what's going to happen? You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, 5-year-olds are out on the street, playing with their friends.
Less and less so.
Right.
But yes, I agree. I get your point. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if it was a pack of wild dogs, like a pack of wild feral dogs, but even wild feral dogs back in the day had the sense to stay in Dogtown. They weren't necessarily roaming the streets.
So you can't say. Joey Shimtar can't say I'm more afraid of pit bulls than I am of coyotes.
Hear me out.
You can't say that because the pit bull people are more psychotic than the coyote people, saying that's your fault if you get bit by a pit bull.
You know what? I'll tell you something my vet told me, because I asked my vet, because I was in the vets and 2 pit bulls were in there. I have my dog. 2 pit bulls were in there.
You're going to get in trouble.
No.
I'm warning you.
Okay, warning you.
You say what you're going to say. I'm not trying to edit you.
But I'm just going to
tell you, we've seen this. Go ahead.
Okay, but I'll tell you what, this is what my vet told me about them. Because I asked her point blank. I said, you have these 2 pit bulls, and they've just beat each other up, and they're all bloodied and, in very bad condition. do you think that pit bulls are a more vicious species? And she said, no. They are so much, they are such strong, powerful dogs with such huge, powerful jaws
and
muscles that when they do get into a fight, they are, the damage is 10 times worse, is what she told me. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. But nonetheless, I'm still afraid of a pit bull. If I see a pit bull, I am personally still afraid. But anyways, I just thought that was really, that was a, you know, that was an enlightening way to look at why there is some, I mean, because yesterday, a child was killed by a pit bull. Did you read that in the...
It doesn't surprise me.
A child was killed, and the other one's in a coma in the hospital.
Well, there was the statistic that was listed on that website. Jeez, I don't have that website right now. The local ne.ws. There was a animal control officer, I want to say in Ipswich or Rowley, someplace up there, and he put out a bunch of facts about coyotes.
Right.
There was 7 coyote bites, recorded coyote bites on humans.
Right.
And there's like millions of dog coyote bites. So,
right.
Like, you're going to put all this energy into controlling coyotes when
right.
you get dogs. You know,
doing much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And doing many more injuries. No, I agree. But I think it's unfolding before our eyes. But, and I also
think that's
that
fair.
I think part of our role, too, is like there's, like the article that I posted yesterday, I had pointed that out before, like I put links to that. I just decided to put the whole thing up because I saw that other people had posted on other websites, because there's always a thing where we try to post an article and then put a link back to the original place.
Right.
But that article is in 30 different places on the internet, and the guy's very well respected. And I really like the way he wrote about it, that it's not a coy wolf. We don't have a separate species going on here. If the further, I don't know if you had a chance to read the whole article. The further south you go, the more domestic dog. Coyotes have much greater DNA. Like by the time they get down to Florida, they're like 1% coyote and 30% domestic dog. So, you know, I think it's a story that's unfolding right before our eyes, which I think is really, really interesting. So
I totally agree with you. And I think that, like, I do not side with the people that say we need to eradicate them.
I
think that the, well, who's in charge, Massachusetts-wise, there needs to be some money put aside for studies, for benchmarking what's going on, so that we can have accurate numbers.
Right.
Because the coyote, you know, the people at Wolf Hollow, they you know, because they're part of this kind of group.
Right.
As far as they're concerned, I'm paraphrasing, but like they've never done anything wrong. Coyotes never done anything wrong. A wolf has never done anything wrong, and humans are all evil, bad people out to kill them. But and then the other people, there's the people that want to eradicate them on the other side.
Right.
Somewhere there needs to be a rational discussion.
Right. And also, it would have been great if 10 years ago, when it started, if you know we were tagging them and had like a
how do you tag them?
Well,
do a dart gun and then
with a dart gun you put them to sleep, like you tag any, like
I think that's a great idea.
Just
to track and see where they're
at, to track what they're doing. I mean, it would be so awesome if we could do that.
I love that idea. That is brilliant. Going on, so that's our conversation about that. I saw this something that was really intriguing to me. I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or what, but there's this infomercial lately, and it's for a thing called Telo Years, TeloYears.
Okay.
And the premise is, what is your Telo Years, your age? What it does is you sign up, you pay a fee.
Okay.
They send you, like, some vials or something. I don't know if it's medically done or whatever. You send back blood samples, and they tell you your age
in this
Telo Years.
Okay.
So, like, you know, you may have taken care of yourself and everything else, and so they kind of like grading you
So you may be 50 years old, but you may be 35 years old in Tilo years. You may be 50 years old, but you might have really beaten the shit out of yourself, and you may be 67 years old in Tilo years. It seems interesting to me, and I don't know if it's a scam or not, because I don't really go for these type of things.
Like,
but I wonder how accurate they could get. Like, you say, this is where you are, like, compared to your peers.
Are they just taking it by, it's just a blood sample?
It's a blood thing. And I don't know how accurate it was, or if it's a scam. But was you interested compared to your peers?
You know what? I would, like, I've met this amazing nurse practitioner, Kelly, and I would ask her about it, because she was like, she knows everything, and she would be the one who would know, like, can you tell that by looking at somebody's blood? Is there really enough information in a person's just purely based on blood? Is there enough information?
Yeah,
in
that? I don't know.
Because then think of all the, like, blood banks and stuff like that. Like, you know, do you want people with old
now there's a new thing that they're pumping older people with young people's blood. You can do that now.
Right.
There's people that are paying. The company is providing this service that you go in and they'll put in young people's blood into you.
Doesn't that sound a little vampire-ish?
It absolutely is, but this is a thing. This is absolutely a thing.
Well, that's why Keith Richards is alive, I guess, right?
I guess. Oh, right. Does he do blood transfusions all the time?
I mean, he had to a long time ago, you know, from all that.
For the drugs.
From all
you don't
that
have to, like, say it. No one, you're not just hiding a secret that Keith Richards does drugs. I find it.
I didn't want to slam Keith Richards.
So, I wonder. And this is something I'm totally ignorant on. But you know how, like, there are older men and they take testosterone and it, like, they feel invigorated, their sex drive is kicked in. Is it the same thing with women and estrogen? If you get a shot of estrogen, you get more energy and you feel like you get a little boost?
I do know.
Because why wouldn't everybody do that if that was the case?
Well, I do know that I do know a few women who for years have been getting estrogen shots and I'm amazed by it. I would never do something like that myself.
Okay, why?
Well, first of all, it's all kind of experimental. Like, what's the dosage? And I'm just thinking of people, like, with early birth control, and they were getting mega doses of estrogen, and then they all got ovarian cancer and things like that. Yeah. So, you know,
At your age, though, I'm not saying that you're old or anything, but what I'm saying is, at this point, what do you got to lose? You're not going to have babies anymore.
No, but...
Oh, well, ovarian cancer.
I want to live for a long time, and I don't want to screw around with my...
What's supposed to happen?
Yeah, with my natural, you know, the way you're supposed to age, the way... I just want it to be... I'm just going to do it completely natural. I don't even like taking an aspirin. Like, when you go to the doctor's office now, there isn't just one line to fill in what prescriptions you take. There's a whole page for people to fill in what drugs they take. And I'm just like, I'm pretty anti-drug, prescription drug. Estrogen falls in that category. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah,
I never wanted to do anything like that, especially during my childbearing years, because I didn't want to, you know, mess up the baby or anything like that, or cause birth defects down the road. So I guess you're right. I'm not going to have kids anymore, but I still just don't want to.
If it could give you for the male part of it, testosterone doesn't sound like there's any drawbacks to it.
I have lots of energy. I don't need more energy.
You do?
I do.
I don't have a lot of energy, but I'm getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. 3:30.
All I have to do is have a cup of coffee and a cup of real coffee, and I'm like, that's rocket fuel for me for 2 days.
Yeah, no, I hear you. The other part, taking this a step further, I am all in the camp of when I turn like 65, I'm going to start going on low doses of the happy pills.
What are the happy pills?
Like, I don't know, what are these, the antidepressants that, like, you're just
you're not going to take those.
when you get to be that old, why not just keep, you know, if you get 7 or 8 years of decent years left, why not just start, start ramping up?
Why would you only have 7 or 8 years of decent years left?
Like, well, my family history, my dad, and everybody else gets the Alzheimer's, like when they starting around 60, 65.
I don't think that's going to happen to you.
I don't know. I hope not, but
I don't think that's going to happen to you. Look how
it's gone right through the right great grandfather, grandmother, father, and it's like there's like a line that comes right down at me.
Is there a test that you can do?
I don't want to take the test. Yeah. Well, I mean, really, you find out you got it.
Right.
You feel like you got it. You might as well just.
Right.
What are you going to do?
I don't think it's going to happen to you.
Well, I guess there would be a good part about taking it and knowing, because then you would. Do that. It would maybe motivate you to do things you wouldn't necessarily do instead of putting them off till you're already cooked.
I think you're a very creative person, and I think that if you're constantly exercising your brain, then that is really helps prevent that.
Yeah.
So.
We got to have big props and big happy time. Third time's a charm for Charles and George.
George, yeah.
The awesome Gloucester Foundation awarded them the micro grant. They call it a micro grant? $1,000 grant to get the case to display the bachelor coat.
Yes, and I think that this is the case. I think the case is like $3,000. Because I think they really wanted the climate controlled case, I believe.
Yeah, and they raised money other ways and stuff.
Yes, they had to raise all the money prior to this for the coat restoration. So I can't wait to see it. It's going to be beautiful.
The awesome Gloucester Foundation. They're on Facebook. Go check out their page. Yeah, but what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I think it's going to be beautiful when it's completed. I mean, it's really,
Well, it's a treasure to be sure.
And also, it's just kind of show. I think it's really, Catherine's a friend, but I also think it's really good parenting on Catherine and Cliff's part that, they've just encouraged their sons to run, to just run with it and go as far as they can to make this thing really work. And I think they've done a beautiful job with
those kids are as involved as any kids that I've ever come across. They're everywhere doing everything. As far as civically, there's no kids that are doing more civically than those kids. They are down at the Harbor Walk. Right. I mean, she lugs them around. Well, she's busy doing civic stuff, and she lugs them to everything. That rubs off, and that's good stuff.
That's good stuff.
Congratulations, Charles and George. Paprika Grill is, we did a piece for them. It blew up. The guy, he's contacted me several times, and he says couldn't thank us enough.
Aww.
From the time before to the time after we put the video up,
his
business has taken off. So I'm very psyched about that.
Well, I'm hoping to get to goat food there for dinner tonight. So I was thinking about getting the falafel and the baba ganoush. What else? Do you have any specific recommendation?
The lamb kebabs were ridiculous.
Lamb kebabs, okay.
Yeah, something. Everything is really tasty and fresh.
I'm glad you said that, because that isn't something I would have normally tried. So we'll add that to the to-go thing.
Yeah.
Super excited to try that.
I don't know if this is breaking news. I don't think many people know about this yet, but Nick Marcos is going to be taking over the former La Rosa's and AJ's spot at 23 East Main Street.
That's exciting.
Very exciting.
Okay.
Pier 23 Kitchen.
And what kind of food do you think they're going to have?
I don't know. He invited me to do a piece with him, so I'm gonna meet with him probably one of these next couple of days.
Okay. Pier 23.
Pier 23.
Now, why is it called Pier 23? It's
23 East Main Street is the address.
Okay.
So
that combines the address and the fish pier right down.
And the fish pier, exactly. Okay. So it'll be interesting to see what he's got cooking. Okay. Brendan Crocker. Who was the sous chef at Au Beaujolais, which I frequently credit as the turning point for Gloucester, the restaurant renaissance, which I feel led the rest of the renaissance of Gloucester.
You led a lot of people
coming in,
new
and
ideas,
other restaurants opened, just blew up, and the city of Gloucester blew up. He was a sous chef there. He went on from there to start and open up the Wild Horse in Beverly.
Oh, okay.
Wild Horse was wildly successful. And he did amazing. That place was jamming, and he must have made a lot of money there. What?
When did that end? When did
I think he sold it. I don't know what's going on there now.
Oh, okay.
And now he's opening Black Arrow in the former site of Foreign Affairs in Manchester. We were a big fan. Our friend Doug Pappas was the chef there before. It's not open anymore. And
you know what? I'm so out of it. I didn't even know Foreign Affairs closed.
It had a run
after
Doug left. Yeah.
Okay. And when do you know when they're going to be opening?
I don't know. We put a press release on the blog. I didn't read it. I think he's working feverishly to get it open there.
Okay.
So
wow.
He does inventive stuff.
Yeah.
He was at the forefront of the whole culinary.
It's kind of hard to choose where to go some nights.
Bananas. You just got the iPhone 7.
Oh yeah, and I love it. See, I was having problems with the iPhone 6s Plus. Like when I needed it, it would just die, and it would say SIM card needs to be installed, and I would have to go to the Verizon store. They would poke around inside, do something, and then it would work. And I was like, well, gee, I just was in kind of an emergency, and I needed my phone. So I went in and I said, am I eligible for an upgrade? And they said yes. So basically, it's paying for itself with my upgrade, with my trade-in, because my trade-in was in perfect condition. So now I have this nice new 7.
Do you have a monthly bill for the rent, for the charge for the phone?
Yes, that just happened, because I used to just be able to buy your phone outright, but
so,
with Verizon,
so let me,
that just changed.
I just want to explain something to you. The phone wasn't free.
No, it's not free.
You're financing, just like solar, you're financing that phone. And over the course of however many years, that phone is going to end up costing you probably $500-$600, just so you know.
Right, but my trade-in value was $600 on the phone that I just gave them. So it's a wash, because every month I get a check. I'm getting a rebate every month for like $25. For my phone, and this is costing $25.
Okay.
So it was a total wash, because they've tried to sell me various plans before, but I always read the fine point. But because my 6S Plus was in perfect condition and so new and so valuable, it was it was almost like just trading the phone for a new one. But I know what you're talking about.
They changed it. It used to be every 2 years you can come in and you'd get a new phone.
And you could get a new.
But it's kind of like a different thing now, because the plans were, for unlimited plans, used to be like $100.
Right.
So that within that $100 was the money that was paying part of your phone.
Okay.
Now the plans for unlimited plans are more like $65.
Right, they're way cheaper.
And you pay $35 for the latest and greatest phone for X amount. I don't know how long the contract has to be.
Right, but mine's 2 years. But like I
said,
After 2 years, it'll be mine. Yeah. I hate doing upgrades. It's so complicated. It's just such a pain in the neck. I'd rather just keep a phone for 20 years. The guy at the Verizon store was so nice. Look what he did. He cut my, because the 6S Plus case was, the hole wasn't big enough.
So you got to use the same case?
Yeah, I got to use the same case, and he cut that out. Wasn't that nice?
Very nice, yeah.
And so now, because this has an actual zoom lens on it, the new phone. That was why I was intrigued by it.
What do you mean? The other one that you couldn't zoom?
You could zoom, but it wasn't an
actual
zoom.
Is it pinch to zoom?
Yeah, it was, like, there's two ways to zoom. There's digital zoom, and there's an actual zoom lens.
Oh, okay.
And so that's on regular cameras, too.
Right,
so,
yeah.
So this is an actual zoom. It has a separate, like, this lens is twice as big. It has a little separate little zoom lens there.
Is the camera thicker to accommodate that? Doesn't it have to go this way?
Mm-mm. No, it's not thicker.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then it's also supposed to, I haven't tried this yet, it's also supposed to be really good for filming video in low light.
I heard that. All the phone, the iPhone cameras have always been phenomenal. The latest Android phones, the cameras are phenomenal. I was reading a thing the other day from a guy that has an iPhone and said that the latest Google phone camera is the best camera out there.
It is.
Which was surprising to me.
Well, I mean, I looked at those Google phones. They're nice.
Did you see? I haven't seen one in person.
Yeah, they're nice.
I was thinking about that being my next phone, but I'm not going to buy it until this. If this, my current phone breaks, because it's my phone right now is doing everything I'm asking it to do.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to upgrade.
Right, and I don't like. I turned Siri off and all those things off. I know it's dumb, but
there's a lot of you, just. I think my biggest pain is the notifications. You gotta just go through and shut everything off manually.
That's
because you just get crazy annoyed by it.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah, well, there you go. Another Gloucestercast.
I know, well, it's good to see you, Joey.
It's been over 2 weeks. It's been over 2 weeks since our last podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
This is 214, but now we're gonna try to bang out a couple a week.
We are.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
You are committed.
I'm ready.
Yes, you're ready. This is Gloucestercast 214. We'll probably do it. We'll plan on doing our next one on Sunday. And after this, we'll talk about who we're going to try to get in for our special guests.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, good.
All right. For Joey Shimataro, Kim Smith, thanks for coming.
Okay. Thank you, Joey.
All right. It's January 18th. Gloucestercast 214 is in the books.